You're listening to the New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planning. If you're looking to take your next strategic step towards multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com has a new look, a new host, and new resources. Take a minute and check out the Church Planning Masterclass with lessons from leaders like Matt Chandler, D.A. Horton, Trillia Newbell, and more at newchurches.com.
Ed Stetzer here, and thanks again for joining us for another episode of the newchurches.com podcast. We're actually on episode 625. So here's a fun fact. When we get to 626, I'm going to point out that was the P.O. box of the first church that I planted. P.O. box 626, Buffalo, New York. Anyway, another story for another day. So we've changed the format some. We'll have some new guests. We'll have some different conversations. One of the things we've been doing now is actually looking through some common questions about church planting. And today's episode title is, What is a Church Planting Movement? So we're going to talk about that with our guest host, and let me tell you a little about him. So our guest host is Brad Briscoe. He's the director of Bivocational Church Planting for the Send Network. He holds a doctorate in missional ecclesiology. His doctoral thesis was on assisting existing congregations in transitioning to a more missional direction. I've known him probably 20 years in different settings. Serves on the national leadership team for Forge America Mission Training Network. Some of you be familiar with Forge. Co-author of Missional Essentials, A Missional Quest, and Co-Vocational Church Planting. His wife have three children, have been foster parents for more than 50 other kids. What a blessing as well. Let me encourage you to check out the Bivo course on newchurches.com, Bivocational Ministry course on newchurches.com. It's with Hugh Halter. Just go to newchurches.com to get information there as well. Okay, so Brad, let's talk. I mean, everybody is using the term church planting movement in different ways and having different meanings. So let's kind of start off by defining what our terms mean. But let's not define church planting movement. I think David Garrison, you know, his book is so pervasive that I think he's kind of defined those three words together. But what's a movement and how does it relate to church planting?
Well, Ed, so it's great to spend a few minutes with you today. So, well, I think as it relates to movement, I think there's some key words. If I remember right, I remember the first time kind of going back and looking at like the IMB's definition of church planting movement. I think movement, we need to tap into some words that they use in their definition around. I remember one of the words is rapid.
Yep.
Another little phrase that they use in that definition is exponential increase. Also think a very important word or phrase is indigenous. I think in the IMB definition, they talk about indigenous churches planting churches. So I think it's key that they're churches that are actually planting churches. And the last little phrase I remember is they focus in on kind of a particular people group or maybe a particular geographical location or place. So I think when we really think of movement, those are some of the phrases that I think are important to highlight.
Yeah, no question. And I think the one of the things that's tricky is, of course, that term, David Garrison wrote this book that really became widely used and kind of modified the definition a couple of times. But generally, a rapid multiplication, other places said exponential multiplication of indigenous churches planting churches that sweeps through a people group or a population segment, things of that sort. So that's the general idea. Now, David and I are friends. We get together. He's in Colorado Springs now. So we get together with some friends when we're out there. We disagreed a few years ago that there were church planting movements in the West. I've said publicly there are 34 Western industrialized democracies and no church planting movement among any of them, among majority peoples. And then Warren Bird and I did some research, and David helped contribute some writing to that book, In Viral Churches. We actually proposed, we like movements, we just don't think that we've seen church planting movements the way David Garrison described them in the West. So, but we have seen in your lifetime and mine, we've seen church multiplication movements, which we defined a little differently as a movement of churches that multiplies the number of churches by 50% in a given year with 50% conversion rate to the third generation. And we've actually seen that in times like Calvary Chapel and the Vineyard out of the Jesus People movement. So that's not sometimes what could be seen as an insurmountable obstacle. So it seems that those things are there. So you've written a lot on, well, I love the fact you have a doctorate in missional ecclesiology. That's so much cooler than my doctorate. But what are some things that you think it will take for us to get to a more movemental Christianity?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I'll ask why don't we see church planting movements in North American context? And I agree. And I still remember, Ed, many years ago, you saying that there just aren't really church planting movements in a North American context. And I remember the first time I heard you say that, wanting to push back a little bit. But the more I listen and then the more I read, it's like, no, that's true. There really haven't been any here. So I think a good follow-up question is, why don't we see that?
Yeah.
Or maybe on the flip side to ask, how do we need to think differently, or how do we need to behave differently to begin to see some level of movement? And I think it's probably not complicated, but I think it's multifaceted. There's no silver bullet. But for me, when I think about what are some of those things that we need to think differently or behave differently, I think one of them is we have to develop a more of an activating all the people of God mindset. We need to at least kind of diminish the clergy laity divide, where we can empower all the people of God to engage in His mission. We need to help people just see how do they fit into God's redemptive mission and not just the ministry of the church. So I think part of it is helping everyone in our churches to discover their passion and wiring for mission, and then really asking, how can we better equip and resource and release everybody into that mission? And eventually some of that's going to involve starting something new. So I think activating all the people of God is a big piece. I think a related idea or concept is we need to help people rethink their vocation in the marketplace. So sometimes the way I'll say that is, not only do I feel like we need to diminish the clergy-laity divide, where we empower all the people to engage in mission, but we need to diminish the sacred-secular divide in regards to vocation. So I just think there's too many people, they don't see how their calling in the marketplace contributes to or participates in the mission of God. So we need to help people discover and deploy them into that mission. And part of that's going to involve more and more bivocational or co-vocational planters. I mean, it's just no possible way we're going to see a movement or even really multiplication in the level we'd like to see if we're not deploying bivocational and co-vocational planters.
Yeah, so here's where we get the. I wrote an article called for the declergification of church planting. The declergification of church planting.
I like that.
And it's tricky. You and I are we're both in the same denomination. There's pretty low church ecclesiology. So earlier in the fall, I was with an Anglican diocese, and they have a very much higher, more robust. You know, you got to get. I mean, to be a member of the clergy, 3-4 years of undergrad, 3 years of seminary. But it was actually Roland Allen, an Anglican missiologist, who you've quoted on many occasions, who. You actually don't have to like quote Roland Allen, just to quote the titles of his books. The title of three key books are Missionary Methods, St. Paul's or Ours. I mean, how did they do it in the Bible, right? The Case for Voluntary Clergy, which he didn't have the cool name co-vocational, but Case for Voluntary Clergy couldn't be very clear, much clearer. And then The Spontaneous Expansion of the Church and Causes That Hinder It. So we would agree that we need to give more people permission. We need to look to qualify people, not just look for qualified people. And we need to find multiple paths for people to plant churches. Now, even in the highest, you know, I just had dinner with some Lutheran leaders. Even in the highest polity, you know, the Lutherans have what's called SMP, specific ministry pastor. So under, in their polity, under an ordained member of the clergy, which is, you know, much higher polity required than maybe you and I do in our world, they can still have somebody who's raised up from the harvest, you know, very New Testament-ish, and a specific ministry pastor who then's trained in place and more. So I don't know of any denomination that can't do this, but there seem to be some cultural forces that keep people from doing this. People seem to expect, even unchurched people seem to expect, if they engage and connect with the church, some sort of professional to help them with their spiritual questions. So, I mean, how do you see people kind of stepping into that space who are non-professional, who didn't have 3 years of seminary, who we're four, you know, both of us, I mean, we both got doctoral degrees. So what are paths that actually normalize everyday people using their gifts as leaders in church planning and more?
Well, I think part of it is rethinking church. I mean, I think, and this isn't an either or, I'm a big both and guy,
right.
But I think we have to recognize and legitimize smaller expressions of church. And those are expressions that are going to be in neighborhoods, they're going to be in workplaces, they're going to be in social spaces. And really, I was just thinking, when we really think about movement and multiplication, I think it's also helpful sometimes to think about what are some of those barriers or blockers that keep us in a North American context of seeing multiplication. And part of it, I think, has to come back to this idea of the way we think of church, and even get real practical here, even meeting spaces. I mean, think, if church depends on us finding a space where we can sit up 100 chairs, then there's not going to be movement. I mean, we need to be able to move into some of those spaces that we're already inhabiting, like social spaces or coffee shops, cafes, our neighborhood. So I think part of activating all the people of God to start things is we need to give them a new imagination or a different imagination for what church might actually look like in their context. So it's just simpler. It's probably going to be smaller. It's going to be more nimble. You know, they're not going to have to be able to preach a 40-minute sermon on a stage thing. So we just got to give them
the line there.
If I the sermon, I'm out. We just got to give them a different imagination.
It's very New Testament-y. I like that. It's very New Testament-y. We would want to be, you know, part of the conversation about church-minded movements that got heated at times was, well, what's the ecclesiology? What do we believe about church? But I mean, I actually think that I've written lots of times on there are six marks that should be present in every church and every culture and every time. But those can be in a house church in China just as easily as a mega church in Dallas. So it doesn't preclude or exclude those expressions. But it seems, and here's the part that it's hard, and this is the part where, you know, some of the more aggressive advocates for church planning movement methodology got frustrated with me when this was a bigger conversation. I said, it appears that I mean, the culture doesn't seem to have the framework, the necessary cultural realities. And I kind of put it on three things. They have some downward pressure on meeting size. We don't have that, but you have that in places where you can't find a place to meet, or places where it's illegal to meet. So, you know, church planting movements are in Cuba. And so when people have the ability to do so, they meet in larger and larger groups. So there has to be some downward pressure, it appears. Second thing is there has to be some sense that there's something special, unique, you know, it might be new. So a church planting movement among the Bengalis is a new expression of church. The challenge is when there's old expressions of church around it, people, why would you not be drawn to a beautiful worship space with a band and a smoke machine? I gathered the mega churches and the micro churches in Austin together, and you know, just had this conversation, and it was actually the author of Simply Church. She's got a passion for, you know, helping Felicity Dale, for helping micro churches plant. And she just said, it's very awkward to sing with 15 people in our house. And I totally understand. And she was looking at Tim Hawks at Hill Country Bible Church and said, I totally understand why people in our church end up at their church. So there's that reality. And then I mentioned earlier, I think there's just a reality that if people's car is broken down, I just had my car repaired. If people's car is broken down, when my car was repaired, I didn't call Clint Clifton, who's our friend and we love him, but I didn't call him and say, I need you to fix my car. I went to a mechanic because I expect someone to know something about cars. And so people often expect someone to know more than them. So they don't go to their mechanic for spiritual advice. They go to a trained member of the clergy. Just like if they have psychological struggles, they go to a trained counselor. So all these cultural forces seem to push against it. So Brad, how in the world do you get to the place where, if I agree with you, and I do, I want to see church planting movements, but there are these cultural forces working against them, how do we work against the cultural forces?
Well, first question, I think, Ed, is even, I mean, I agree with you, those cultural forces, but aren't those forces that you just described more related to church people than it is lost people?
Maybe.
I mean, I just think these, most of them just don't have those cultural forces. I mean, even like Felicity Dell's comment about, well, I see why they go from our church to that church. Well, but is that true of a lost person that either is skeptical of the church or maybe even hostile towards the church that they know of? I mean, I just think there are these cultural, I think there are these other cultural forces among people that have no affiliation with the church that are so strong, we just have to have a different starting point. And I think just listening to what you said there, that's another little phrase that just popped in my head, is I think, again, it's not an either or, it's a both and, but I think in many cases, if we're really trying to reach into these pockets of brokenness in our cities, we have to have a different starting point. And the starting point has to be missionary behaviors and activities and not the Sunday gathering. And you know this so well, is that just too much of our church planting, it's really code for starting a Sunday morning worship service. And I'm not anti Sunday morning worship service, but I just think in a missionary context that we're all living in a rapidly increasing missionary context, that we just have to start with discipleship and mission. We need to start with missionary behaviors and activities. And I think the people in our congregation, they get that, and we can help them with that. We can equip them and release them and empower them for that. But it just has to be, there has to be a more simple starting point that we just haven't been very good at, I don't think, in the church planting world, because we think of church planting as, you know, we all know, renting the space and getting a worship leader and sound system and all of that. And I just don't think that's where we are in our cultural context right now.
Yeah, no, I agree with you that I just think that the pocket of people who are that distance from an understanding of those cultural forces is a lot smaller. So I think that, you know, still almost 70%, mid to high 60% Americans think themselves as Christians. They think, when they think of church, I'm not saying it's good, I'm saying it is. When they think of church, they think of a place, not a people. So when my hope, where we'll actually see an outbreak of the kind of church planting movement that David Garrison described, I still think we can see a church multiplication movement with a deeper commitment to plant churches that plant churches. I really like your caution about, you know, people think of church planting. I mean, our audience is church planters, right? They're listening and like, yeah, I actually do think of church planting as starting a Sunday morning service. We set the date of most right. church plants on the launch day, not the discipleship process before the launch day. So I think we can completely agree that those cultural challenges are less so in the most de-churched places. So you go with me to some places in New York City where I'm just finishing up in interim. Matter of fact, when this is recording, I'm in New York City. When this is dropping, I'm in New York City getting ready for our Christmas spectacular because it's New York City. At a building that we're renting. We don't have a building. We rent Hunter College. But I think that more marginalized church distant places are where some of those church planting movements come out. I also think though that, and this is one of the reasons I want to have you on, is that so much of what you have written and talk about, I mean, you wrote your dissertation on helping established churches transition to be more missional. So talking to our audience, which is church planters, you know, people who are church planter adjacent, who are not all going to be planting, you know, house church, organic church, whatever term we want to use, but need to hear what it means to be more nimble, more flexible, more even redefine about what church planting is, instead evangelize and disciple into existence churches, not services. What advice and counsel would you have for them?
Well, I would say, first off, try to identify the innovators and early adopters that are already in your congregation. So the innovators are the people that are already doing this. The early adopters are the ones, when you have this conversation, it just taps into, it resonates with them instantly. They say things like, oh my goodness, I've been thinking like this for years. I thought I was crazy. I would identify the innovators and early adopters and find the best way to help them clearly identify their passion for mission outside the walls of the church, and then equip them and empower them to engage in that. And I'll tell leaders in existing churches all the time, look, the moment you equip and empower someone to engage more fully in God's mission outside the walls of the church, you instantly become just a little less centralized and a little more decentralized. And this isn't about blowing anything up or transition everything in a completely different direction. I think it's really helpful in existing congregations to think about incremental shifts. So how can you move, if you have 10% of your congregation that are really engaged in mission outside the walls of the church. And when I say mission outside the walls of the church, I want that to involve starting new things. What if you get that to 20% or 40%, or someday, what if 50% of your congregation are engaged in God's redemptive purposes outside the walls of the church? I just think we have to look at it with kind of a long runway, incremental shift kind of perspective.
Well, if this conversation has been of interest to you, I want to encourage you to check out Brad's book on the subject that deals with some of the space and place for co-vocational. You heard bivocational, similar idea, but emphasizing that there's not just this bifurcation, but what it means to actually be co-vocational. It's called Co-Vocational Church Planting, Aligning Your Marketplace Calling. You heard it mentioned vocation and the mission of God. We're offering the book free and using the link that you'll find in the show notes for today's episode. As always, I want to encourage you to check out newchurches.com. It's your one-stop shop for all resources related to church planting. And now all of those resources are free. Let me say it again. those resources are free. So I want to encourage you to check it out. Go to newchurches.com. You'll also find links to other podcasts in our series as well. Thanks for listening. I'm Ed Stetzer. My guest has been Brad Briscoe, and we're excited about what God's doing through church planting. I encourage you to press on in that mission.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you liked what you heard, take a minute to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources and to participate in the Church Planting Masterclass, visit newchurches.com.